Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a Decoding TV podcast where we talk about stuff that's new in the world of streaming, and if it's good, we analyze it and then recap and spoil everything that's going on. Today, we're going to be discussing The Crown Season 6, Part 1, Episodes 1 through 4. Joining me for this conversation, she is my partner in life as well as my frequent podcast partner. She's known as Joy O'Napping Online. Joy, thanks for chatting with me today.
I am so glad to be back here. The Crown is back. Or should I say, La Couronne est retournée?
Yes, nicely done. So you can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us across all platforms at decodingtv. And we covered The Crown Season 5 last year. It feels like a long time ago.
It sure does.
There was a whole writer and actor simultaneous strike that happened between now and that last time. And a lot of other world events have unfolded in the time since then. It just feels like, it really feels like this.
I feel like the really relevant one is that Charles became king.
Yeah. That is relevant.
And
that
Camilla Parker Bowles is now the queen.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So, yeah, lots happened. Lots happened. Season 6 is the one that is currently on Netflix right now. Part 1 is on Netflix right now, which is the first 4 episodes.
So they're experimenting with that kind of like, it's a binge release, but not kind of model.
I guess my sense, like if I had to just wildly get, that might be it. You know, the first thing I thought of is just that the episodes aren't all finished.
Oh, interesting. I have a much more cynical take. It's, right before American Thanksgiving right now, and the next batch will drop right before Christmas. Mm. And the British in particular have quite a history of holiday, like, event viewing.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So it feels like it's, you know, the time to get together and watch some of the saddest episodes of The Crown ever.
Yeah. Well, in any case, we are going to... this is going to be a pretty loose episode. I'm just going to be honest with you. Like, we generally have like a really detailed recap of everything that happened in the episodes and so on. This one is going to be a little looser. It's just me and Joy talking about these first 4 episodes.
I think it's looser for good reason, which is that these are the first 3 in particular, very intertwined as stories. So it doesn't really quite make sense to recap it episodically. In the same way.
And then the final 6 episodes will air in December. And our current plan is to cover those episodes as well here on This Week in Streaming and Decoding TV. So anyway, you can look forward to that. But in the meantime, I guess we should start by sharing some overall thoughts on Season 6, Episodes 1 through 4, which episodes are entitled Persona Non Grata, Two Photographs, Dis-moi Oui, and Aftermath. And I guess I also want to say, even before we share our overall thoughts on Season 6, I was really not excited about Season 6 because I have to say Season 5 I found pretty disappointing as a season. And you can
as sad as a not quite refurbished ship.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe that was a whole plot line. You can find our conversation about Season 5 on the Decoding TV podcast feed, and I think you can hear that we weren't like super thrilled with it. There's a handful of bangers in there that were really good. Mm-hmm. But overall, it was a pretty disappointing season. So I was kind of dreading this season. I didn't think like they did a good job of building up this version of Princess Diana that we saw in Season 5. I was kind of dreading this season. I was like, are they going to botch this extremely important sequence of events? So Joy, why don't you talk us through your initial reactions?
Are you saying after having dreaded it, you feel better?
Well, I have to say that I really liked this first four batch of episodes. I thought it was very, very strong.
Me too.
It's some of the best work that the show's done, actually.
You know, I think this question has been looming over the show from its inception, which is how are they going to handle this particular set of events that are covered in the first four episodes? And season five felt like a lot of throat clearing. Like, I thought we would get there by the end of season five, and it felt kind of awkward and strange and strained, partly because you could feel the show wrestling in real time with the ascension of Charles, Camilla, the death of Philip, these real characters, quote, these characters in the show are real people who are passing on or very infirm. And you could feel that they were starting to lose some of their willingness to take a clear point of view about historical events and real people.
The show has famously made shit up and in order to like make people like
in order to tell a story telling
yeah in order purpose. To tell like a dramatic story, but it often will make people look bad, even worse than they actually were. And so in season five, I think that, as you were saying, as you're indicating, it kind of lost that bite a little bit.
It also just felt like it lost confidence in even what it was trying, and it didn't take much of a stand at all. And so, except in my view, to become more of a Camilla and Charles apology tour vibe.
I mean, it makes Charles look so good in season five.
Also, like, literally, because, you know, Dominic West is a very handsome man.
But yeah, it's like, oh yeah, Prince Charles is actually like super cool dude. Did you know? He hangs out with breakdancers and
stuff. He's pretty buff and he looks good in a sweater.
Yeah, it was like, okay, all right. It was unrecognizable from the show that we had watched in previous seasons for, you know, plus the cast is different.
And there were times that Diana felt a bit like a, kind of like a clay model imitation of Diana, you know, like with her famous outfits and her famous tics, but not necessarily super well inhabited. Anyway, so to your point, I agreed. Also, it was hard to tell whether it was because of the writer's strike and the SAG strike, but there was just no buzz coming about the release of this. And I became concerned that's because they really, really chuffed it. Like they really, like Charlie Brown totally missed the football. Netflix was just like, dump it.
AKA treat it like how you treat most shows. I mean, I think that how Netflix would treat most shows. I think that in general, for a streaming service promoting a show that is in season six, like they generally, they don't bring out the big guns when it comes to promoting like a show that's in its like sixth season.
But it is not in its sixth season. It is reaching its apex. The most famous set of events, that end up being the lens through which most of us think about all these people.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the climax.
I think here's my response to that is I think Netflix believes that they don't have to like do a big advertising campaign or whatever because,
I hear you.
People are going to watch it already. They know that they're going to have great retention and they know that based on the subject matter, they're going to be able to get people to like view
it. But point being, it became concerning to me as like more data points that maybe they've continued to lose their nerve and they're like, you know, no one needs to look behind the curtain. We definitely finished the show, but it's okay.
I agree with you. The buzz has felt strangely muted on this one.
But let me tell you, go watch this. You literally don't need to have watched the rest of the show to watch these four episodes. Mm, yeah. That's my take.
Mm.
And if you think of these four episodes almost as a movie, I think it is a perfectly satisfying story that is to some extent self-contained, that brings to light incredibly important and very real forces that shaped what it was like to be an extremely famous woman in the 90s.
Yeah.
And so, and the persecution that can come with that.
Yeah.
And the double-edged sword of being that famous.
I agree. I thought it was a really strong batch of episodes. Just really, really well done. Now, I want to acknowledge that I think at its worst, this show in general can be exploitative, is a piece of media that can be exploitative of the figures that it covers. Like, I think that it is obviously everyone's involved in the show is making money, you know, and it's often twisting facts, making up scenes in order to like, you know, because it's using these real life very much a live figure, is to tell a story.
To make a soap opera.
Make a soap opera, right. And so I want to acknowledge that is a thing that is actually going on. And also, this is a season that takes pretty square aim at British tabloid culture. And very much, I think, attributes a huge amount of responsibility to British tabloid culture for Princess Diana's death.
So it does
it really well, in my opinion. And so I bring that up because I think it does a good job of that. And also, it is a piece of media that is
I've read a lot of books, and I'm like a smug book reader about this particular time period for Diana. I've read a lot about this. There are things that are known about what happened, and there are things that are speculation about what happened in her final summer, basically, that she was with us. And the show absolutely chooses a narrative that is some part of the speculation and also some things that are truly just inserted for narrative convenience. Mm-hmm. So I wondered, how would they navigate the thorniness and the contentiousness and the different points of view about what happened that summer?
Yeah.
And so, for instance, you and I recently saw this incredible film called Anatomy of a Fall, which I would highly recommend to anybody. And that film is about someone who falls to their death and the many and evolving perspectives you can have on what happened that day and why. And it allows you to sit with a profound amount of ambiguity as an audience member. This version of the story, I would say, filled in the blanks 80 to 90% with a point of view. And I just want to say, I feel like obligated to say, not everything that is shown is settled fact.
Mm-hmm,
the movements are all accurate, but like, and not even just, obviously you're not in the room, you're not bugging the room, so you don't know what the dialogue was, but like, some pretty key questions, like what was the status of the relationship between Diana and Dodi Fayed? What was the origin of the relationship between Diana and Dodi Fayed? What happened between Dodi Fayed and his fiance, Kelly, who we see at the end of season 5, canoodling, and who at the start of season 6, she is under the impression she is going to get married to him very soon.
Mm-hmm.
With all that in mind, even though they chose a path, I was very moved by the path they chose, because they mostly chose to protect the dignity of the two people who died.
Yeah, I agree. I think
it without being so ridiculously unrecognizable that you wouldn't say that those were real people.
I agree. I think virtually every character in the story is given some kind of dignity, which I was really impressed by. But yeah, that's why I gave my whole caveat, is like, yes, we have to acknowledge that there have been many complaints about the show and how it treats the royal family and how it often depicts them in a negative light or shapes characters for its own purposes. And yet, I think they did a great job of like telling a story that makes you appreciate these people more. Perhaps think about elements of the story that you might not have thought about otherwise. So I was a big fan.
Yeah.
Big fan of the first 4 episodes. With some occasional huge missteps. One large misstep that we will talk about. But other than that, I thought it was really, really impressive. So
can I just say, I thought this framing device of the first 3 episodes as being, first you see basically the crash, so you understand where we're headed, literally. And then we have an 8-week flashback, and this summer gets retold as a sort of distinct chapter in time. That feels very fair to me. Like, all the coverage of her life that I've read treats this summer as this kind of odd transitional feeling. And then through the course of the 3 episodes, we see a lot of her dynamic with her sons, which I feel like is put in there probably almost heightened, because she's splitting custody now, and it would be hard for the audience to say goodbye to this character without seeing how she interacts with her children.
Mm-hmm.
The casting, I think, for the children has been great for William and Harry. Then we see her sort of I recognized the person, the depiction of Diana as being closer to what I had hoped for than in season five. So in season four, she's quite sympathetic. In season five, I'm like, who is this flaky person who just mopes around all day in oversized sweatshirts?
She was like unlikable in season five. Like she was unsympathetic and not a particularly nice person, not a particularly intelligent person in season five.
And at the same time that they made Charles look a lot better than he had in season four. So it was like an odd...
Yeah, I'm speaking of the character, of course, not the actual Princess Diana in real life. But I'm saying, like, for a character that had been imbued with so much charisma and life and vitality in seasons, I want to say, season four, I guess it was, to have... the depiction that we saw in season five was really disappointing. So,
yeah. And so even though it's a short run of episodes, I felt like we got to see the landmine work that she did, which was genuinely dangerous and genuinely moving. And I'm so grateful that they showed it. And, you know, yes, she was sort of like romantically involved with this man who she had just met, but it felt less like a random neediness that you got from season five in her romantic relationships. And then you get a sense of her as a mother, and you get a sense of her coming to terms with she doesn't really have a role, but she is going to be relentlessly pursued by attention no matter where she goes. And the sense that that is closing in on her as the summer comes to an end, I think was real. You know, it's not a device that like, oh, the press attention got more and more intense. That is a very real thing.
Yeah.
And so I feel, you know, I've read different depictions and different biographies about like what her final days were like. And this really, really for me captured the feeling that she was so hunted and depressed and forlorn. Feeling like she had left one incredibly stifling environment in the royal family to only end up in a different one with a different set of problems. And it doesn't totally let her off the hook. I mean, they do show her taking the Harrods helicopter to see a psychic in Derbyshire. You know, like it's really, she did do that kind of thing, you know?
Which is like highly likely to attract attention, and she knows it, basically.
Well, and it's also really likely to come across as pretty kooky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think also the extent to which she maybe had to play coy with the press and felt that it, you know, it's not like she literally completely shut them out. You know, there might have been things she could have done other than appear in swimsuits on yachts in Saint-Tropez, you know, that might have been less glamorous and therefore been less appealing as photos. But she didn't do those things. And I'm not, you know, shaming her at all for that. But there is a dynamic between her and the press that's quite symbiotic that I also think they touch on at an appropriate level. And it is obviously what happened to her is completely not proportional to whatever that symbiosis was. But at least they acknowledge it. It all felt very fair to me thematically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, those are some overall thoughts on the first four episodes of The Crown season six.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
We are now going to spoil everything that happens in The Crown Season 6, Episodes 1 through 4. We're not going to do like a detailed recap, but we will kind of talk through the general arc of what occurs. So again, the four episodes are entitled Queen Victoria... I'm sorry, looking at...
Prior season.
Persona non grata, two photographs, Dis-moi oui, and Aftermath. And it kicks off really shortly after the events of Season 5 when she was about to visit Dodi Fayed on the boat. Right?
Mohammed Fayed had invited her down too.
That's right.
I don't think she necessarily.
Right.
Was
they had not met yet, as far as
they
I
had
could.
Met or, casually, yeah, briefly.
At the dinner, was that? Or, anyway.
I think it was at a horse race.
Okay. Well, maybe. Anyway, but, yeah. I have all the details wrong. That's why you're here. No, I'm saying her and Dodi hadn't met yet. Is that right? Or
they had met.
Okay. Oh, right. Because
in passing.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So it chronicles, like, you know, their affair that they have on this boat and how it's, like, heavily covered by paparazzi.
Well, actually, so in this version of it, he doesn't really want to date her. He is basically told to date her.
Mm-hmm.
And it is unclear whether Dodi Fayed, who in real life was quite charming and a playboy, this version of Dodi Fayed is a little bit more hapless. And really put upon by his father. There was a yacht with Princess Diana and a smaller yacht with his American model girlfriend. And he did go back and forth between the two yachts for some period of time. The woman almost immediately after did sue, and they mentioned that. For breach of contract. So she really argues we were in fact engaged. She hires Gloria Allred, the celebrity attorney.
Yeah.
And it's not really, there's not even time in the handful of weeks that pass to really ascertain were they engaged or were they not engaged, or did he just give her a ring and say some nice promises. But she gets dumped for Princess Diana. That is true. Now, how do you have that not look completely slimy and awful? Well, they chose a storytelling path in which Dodi is kind of forced to be there. It happens pretty organically. Princess Diana doesn't move in on him knowing that he's with someone else or anything like that. He has a more sort of like uncle sort of, you know, vibe of just hanging out. And then eventually when the children go to Scotland to be with their father for the rest of the summer holiday, then they kind of hang out more and maybe something blossoms. But it does not, it feels like two people genuinely bonding in this version of the story over the fact that they have very oppressive families. And specifically, she talks a lot of shit, Diana, the character, about her own father being impossible to get any attention from.
Yeah.
That was an interesting choice.
Yeah,
it was
a big
choice.
Which we didn't really get a sense of in previous seasons on the show.
We really did not.
Yeah. How... So
That is true. I don't know... While that is true, I don't know that that was the foundation of her relationship with Dodi Fayed.
Right. So how accurate do you think that Dodi Fayed... Like, what happened on the boat? Like, how accurate do you think that was? Because what you have described is... a way to tell the story such that neither of them is particularly culpable for anything bad that might
have
happened.
And so I have no idea what happened on the boat. I wasn't on the boat. Mm-hmm. You weren't on the boat. None of us were on the boat. The person who therefore is made to look like the bad guy is Mohammed Al-Fayed, the father, who's trying so hard to push these people together and sort of treats Princess Diana like a trophy, as well as a chip, you know, to bargain his way into getting British citizenship, probably like peerage and stuff like that. I think the person who gets thrown under the bus the most is Mohammed Al-Fayed.
Yeah.
And
who is no longer with us.
He just passed away a couple months ago. I would say, how do I say this? The depiction of him is probably even a little amped up from the depictions of him in decades of British press and biographies as kind of shady and kind of a manipulator. I think it's probably not incredibly far off character development wise. I don't know that he set about to do these specific things. And he has said, I didn't arrange for these two people to be together. Like that is not... That's above my powers, is to make people fall in love with each other.
Right. So, but you can also imagine why they wouldn't have wanted to tell the quote-unquote more accurate story, right?
Which I don't even know if it's more accurate. Just a different speculation, which is like Dodie's a sleazeball.
Yeah.
And also, like, party's pretty hard and is maybe not very responsible, and that is who Diana has chosen to associate herself with. They've given them both a very dignified version of
that's right.
Events.
That's right. And you know, even with the dignified version, Princess Diana is still dating this guy and hanging out with him, knowing that he's engaged to someone else.
Is that true? A, he may not be engaged. B, she may not know. Like, all of that is, like,
no,
question
like,
mark.
They have a conversation about it.
In the
show.
Right, but...
Oh, you're saying in real life they might not have. But I'm saying even in the show, she knows he's engaged to someone.
But they don't do anything until he says the engagement.
My point is, even in the show, which is extremely dignified depiction, it still doesn't completely let Diana off the hook because, you know, Diana is somebody who has been cheated on, basically.
Right.
And so, like, she has facilitated someone else being cheated on in the show to some degree, I would argue.
Yes, and I think the version of Diana in the show is like, it's a summer fling. Like, I'm hanging out with somebody. Yeah. It is so not a big deal. Like, this is not headed towards marriage at all. This was like a way to pass the time.
Yeah. But... So I guess I'm just trying to say, like, you know, there's still some shadiness going on, but...
Well, and what I just said is not, like, the most dignified version of, you know, adult behavior.
Correct.
Now I just want to point out another big, big, big historical question mark. In the show on episode 2 shifts focus to this perspective of the photographers.
Yes.
Specifically, the photographer... who I recognize as Jaqen H'ghar from Game of Thrones. The guy from Bravos who teaches Arya Stark how to be a person with no face. He gets this shot of them kissing that makes him so profoundly wealthy, even by the standards of paparazzi photographers. It is reported he made $5 million from the rights of this
outrageous
set of photos.
Outrageous, yeah.
Are you jealous?
Yes, extremely. I mean,
that's a whole lot of Texas Hold'em steaks.
Yes, I mean, I would like to not have my work like resulting in the exploitation of people, but like that's a lot of cheddar for one photo.
What was already this incredibly competitive arms race to get celebrity photos. So just picture, you know, the peak period of like Us Weekly and that tabloidization of supposedly, you know. Respectable magazines like People, that he makes so much money from it that people start to realize, oh, there is a true fortune to be made if I can just get the most invasive shot, right?
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that they take the moments to showcase that in parallel with, I think, a very effective contrast of what the royal family is thinking a photographer should look like and be like at the same time. I loved all of those.
That was awesome. And you know, sometimes the show will do this thing where it like snaps into a completely different format. Now it's a documentary, you know, or now we're interviewing someone for some, like, I don't even think we find out like what the interview was about. Because like that photographer is being interviewed for something.
Yeah.
We don't even know what it's for. There is an amazing contrast drawn between the Jaqen H'ghar photographer guy who's like super cool and he's in like a leather jacket and he's
a sexy guy making sexy photos
versus
the very unsexy
versus
Scottish
this guy who's like wearing like a, you know, like a, what is it called, the vest or sweater vest basically, and like he has like an old school camera, you know, like and he's the one that ends up taking the photo of Charles. And the idea is that the episode draws a contrast between the photo of Princess Diana and Dodi Fayed and then Charles with his family. And, like, Charles was basically fighting a PR war on his own, which my understanding is that photo is real, right? So
Yeah. But I think the point is, who tipped off Mario Brasna, a.k.a. Jaqen H'ghar, in the show? There is a point of view that it's Mohammed Fayed. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
He directly tips him off. No one was supposed to know where they were, according to the dialogue within the show.
Yeah.
In Tina Brown's telling of it, Tina Brown has a salacious assertion in her coverage that it was Diana herself.
Wow. For what purpose?
To make Hasnat Khan jealous.
Oh, my God. Again, any like untoward intentions or motivations are attributed to Mohammed Al-Fayed in the show, basically.
Right. And so that is a very big choice that they make to like say that someone did tip them off as opposed to they were just found.
They found it themselves,
And like, you know, you can imagine for yourself how that might have happened.
Yeah.
And that it's specifically this guy who's trying to capitalize on this relationship.
Yeah.
And it's an ick feeling. It's an ick feeling to contemplate.
That the show did that?
Direction.
That the show did that? Or that, that Muhammad
I don't
did
like that.
That. Yeah.
Because I think it's a very undignified look for Muhammad Al-Fayed.
Yeah.
A guy who, you know, already has taken his lumps for things that are absolutely factual.
Right. In the show. Right. In the show.
And will in the future of this show.
Yeah.
You know, like. Yeah.
Interesting.
So I just wanted to raise that.
Yeah. Anyway. So I love the two photographs episode. I just thought it was like.
That's like
classic,
the Crown at
classic,
its best.
Classic the Crown. It's like, hey, we're going to take like two seemingly, like you wouldn't have made the connection in your head necessarily things of like this photo, of this extremely famous photo of Diana and Muhammad, I'm sorry, Dodi, and then this photo of Charles and the kids. And like, we're going to like make you think about what are the connections between
but
these things.
But also show the like, not average people, but the scale of this show is such that like these two photographers are also part of the story. You know, if you just click out and out and out, there are so many people that are involved in this. It reminded me of, you know, there's a phone call between Charles and Camilla that gets wiretapped basically.
Yeah.
And we start with like somebody in a van who happens to overhear that conversation.
There's a scene in this, the season where Charles is walking to the morgue to identify Diana and he has like, I'm guessing 12 people behind him, like just walking into the hall. And I'm like, what do all those people do? You know, like every one of them probably has some kind of job. And we don't even know about it, you know, but you're right. It's like a very big world that the show is like exposing us to. So anyway,
so
episode
two
was like awesome episode. So.
I thought one was good. Two was even better.
Yeah.
And then three, I spent a lot of it like on the verge of tears, you know, and I'm like, emotional thinking about it now. It's called Dis-moi oui, tell me yes, which is the name of an actual line of jewelry from this very, luxury jewelry house. I don't know about, did he see that ring in Monte Carlo? And, you know, I think that might be made up, the sort of, they're running from after getting gelato in the streets.
Yeah.
And really half-assing their disguises.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good way of showing that they basically have no privacy and they're like on the run all the time from the press.
They run through a jewelry store and she happens to say, hey, he's like, really, there's nothing this jewelry store you want. She happens to kind of offhandedly say she wants this ring.
And we should say we don't know the veracity of that story.
I don't know that.
But we should say that the way it's depicted is genuinely terrifying. People seem to be literally crazed, right? Like, it's kind of
like a zombie movie.
It's like a zombie movie. The closest thing to what we have to that is Taylor Swift today. Where, I don't know if you saw, like, Taylor, you know, you actually, not, I don't know if you saw, you told me about it. Taylor Swift went to her friend's wedding.
Jack Antonoff's
wedding reception. And, like, literally, thousands of people just converged on her location. You know, like.
Yeah, they're blocking the street of the restaurant.
That's just like, what are you, but I don't think they were quite as scary as, like, what was in the show, The Crown. But it's like, It is actually terrifying to witness, and I'm sure the show captures it accurately.
And I think like her spiraling downward mood as she feels more and more trapped by that.
Yeah.
Like, so it's when she's on the yacht, she's kind of apart from it. So yes, there are people trying to see her with like lenses from a distance, but the feeling that she can't go shopping, she can't get an ice cream cone, she can't whatever, feels very, very real. And, maybe she's not up to the level of subterfuge, disguise, security, et cetera, it would take to successfully get that ice cream cone. But at some point, you kind of probably think it doesn't, it's not worth anything. So anyway, whether this is true or not, that she then like saw the ring in that particular store and that's why they went to Paris, I think it's actually not 100% clear the purpose of the Paris trip. But then all of the details of, you know, they land in Paris and then they have this really bizarro day where they like first they go to the Ritz. Then they go to, he goes to the jewelry store. Then they go to his flat. Then they go, they try to go to a restaurant. That doesn't work. Then they go to the Ritz dining room.
Right. That is all accurate as
they
far
are
as you
chased
know.
Out of the Ritz. They're not chased out, but she feels so uncomfortable in the Ritz dining room. There, she is literally photographed crying in the Ritz dining room. And so they're like, F this, we're going to go back up to the suite in the Ritz that we were in previously in the day, and we'll have the dinner sent up. All of that actually happened.
Yeah.
And what a haunting and horrible final day of your life.
Yeah.
In the version that we hear in this, or that we see in this show, on top of it, she didn't even want to go to Paris. She just wanted to go home. So it's not even like a necessary stop, but he can sense... A, I may not get another chance with her, and B, my dad's really pushing me.
According
and
to the events of the show.
Within the narrative of the show. And C, maybe it's a sign that she kind of wanted this extremely fancy diamond rings that he then does literally go out and procure that specific ring.
Yeah. Well, I want to take a step back, actually, and say that I think it was the correct decision to start the season with the accident. The very first scene of season 6, episode 1 is the accident. And by the way, you are never shown the accident throughout the whole season. You don't see any footage, no photographs.
I don't want to see it.
You hear it. You hear the sound effect of the crash, but you don't see it at all, which I also think is the right choice. Like, so the reason why that's the right choice is obvious. Like, it would be, you know, sensationalistic and really, really a terrible look.
Repeating the things that we are accusing these paparazzi of doing
in such
a horrible way.
Now, why is it a good idea to start with the accident? I think not doing that makes the accident into a plot point a sort of plot point that you're trying to milk tension out of, as opposed to... We already all know we already all know what happened, and we're just going to try to tell you a version of the story that gives some dignity to these characters. So I actually salute the decision to like start with the accident and then basically show similar sequence later on. But you're not asking yourself the whole time, like, when are they going to get to the accident? They already showed it to us. They already showed us kind of like how it's going to go down. So I thought that was like a good creative choice. Okay. I will also praise... this episode, Di Moi Oui, episode 3, it honestly felt like a Final Destination movie, like where you feel like every single, if you haven't seen the Final Destination movies, it's like, you know, it's a very schlocky horror sequence series.
But you're saying this in a positive
way. No. Well, first of all, it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's not mine.
Yeah. I love this movie series. And the idea is that like death... has it out for you, and everything you do, like no matter how you're trying to avoid it, you can't escape death. And it felt to me like there's something so excruciating to watch about episode 3 of like every single decision that these characters make is going to lead them down this terrible path. If at any point like a decision had been made differently. Like they didn't go to Paris. They didn't go to the dinner at this time. They decided to, she's like, I want to go back to the apartment because that's where all my stuff is. And her, like Dodie's assistant is like, I would recommend you not do that. And then Dodie's like, please just do what I say. You know, like if he hadn't done that, like.
If Dodie hadn't said, make a diversion, which is a reasonable thing to do. And like, I'll get somebody else to drive the car. And the person they choose is the guy who's been drinking and is like 3 in at the bar.
Like at every single step, if like a different decision had been made, we would be living in a completely different world today. And that is a really impact, you know, like I think they told the story in a really impactful way because it's like you see how each decision that's made leads to this inevitable, horrifying tragedy in a way that like comes out because of the deliberateness of the storytelling. Like they could have just like fast-forwarded through a bunch of that stuff.
I thought they did a really, really, really good job with it. And then they insert, to slow it down, 3 things that break my heart. One is a long phone call between her and her kids.
Mm-hmm. Do we know that this happened, or do you?
I have no idea that it happened, yeah. And I certainly don't know that William was like, "Are you going to marry Dodie?" And she says, "Definitely not."
Right.
That I have no.
Because the true nature of their relationship is still contested to this day, like debated. I should say.
I think it is most likely that she was not going to marry him, and that right. she was not very serious about him. But it is contested. Yes, it
right.
is contested. I think yeah. I don't want to give away quote unquote spoilers for real life, but yeah, it's going to be contested
yeah.
in the coming episodes.
Yeah,
and so I think they also have a pause for her to have this really beautiful, practical conversation with this version of Dodie Fayed,
right.
who I really, you know, only halfway recognize from the depictions of him that I've seen elsewhere, but...
Where she's basically like, please, you need to escape from the thumb, under the thumb of your father, and stop doing everything to please your father, and that's the... You're trying to please your father, and that's why we're in this situation in the first place.
But she says it so beautifully. She's like, marrying me is not going to make your father love you more. And he says, I think it might. And, you know, they're both, like,
yeah.
right,
yeah.
you know, in
yeah.
that moment. And it's a beautiful... It was beautiful to me in that this is a very adult way to have a breakup, even though someone has just spent, I don't know, $150,000 on a ring for you. And
yeah, yeah, it was very adult. I agree. Very like practical. Like let's just lay it all on the table and like talk about things like adults. Yeah.
And then, you know, he has his pseudo conversation with his dad or partial conversation with his father. This is another big choice. Like, why does Mohammed Fayed believe they were engaged?
Mm.
Well, based on the conversation that we saw where he hangs up the phone midway through and implies that there's an engagement, he says an arrangement has been made, an agreement has been made. It's very exciting. You know, that you can see why maybe a grieving father would take that to mean,
yeah.
Who wants to hear what he wants to believe, you know, who believes what he wants to hear.
I think it's a very, like... You know, I'm not happy with a lot of like the ways that in which the Crown makes shit up, but it's a very clever way of like from a plot perspective of dealing with the fact that the details of the situation are not widely agreed upon, right? Like,
it's a way to give Mohammed Fayed a little bit of a like out,
right? Like.
That he
could have reasonably come to that conclusion, as opposed to he just made it up.
Right, right. And it's a device that allows Dodie to say all the things that are on his mind
right.
for us, the audience, to hear it. And then finally, they have this very beautiful, quiet moment in the hallway where
yeah.
they're going to sneak out the back. And
it's very nice.
They're just like, they're compatriots
mm-hmm.
in this like life that is impossible. And it feels like they're having very true human moments there in that hallway together. They go out the back and in the car, they actually hold hands. And I believe that, you know, I believe that the version of the story I am seeing in this show, I believe that she cares for him, that he cares for her. That there's a protectiveness of each other between them. Even though she just turned down his engagement proposal and is actually like, come on, be real.
Right, yeah.
And that is a complexity. That's a situation that most of us aren't going to face. But like, I was just very moved that they took the time to give us these moments of humanity. If they were going to insert anything, that I appreciate that they gave us this.
Yeah, yeah. It was really lovely. Really beautiful. You've read the true story, and you believe
well,
it. Like
the story to which
right.
extent to which any
the extent
of us
to which
know
any of us know, and you know, other than the stuff we've already discussed, this feels like you know what Dodie Fayed really felt about Diana, what the nature of the relationship was, how Mohammed Fayed might have understood the relationship. Like this feels like a reasonable depiction of.
It was a choice,
yeah.
but it was the choice that. The purpose of the Crown is to give us in 2023 or in the 2020s, you know, today, a way to look back on this set of events, right?
Yeah.
Not just Diana's death, but the entirety of, you know, and it's a frame. It doesn't have to be the only frame.
Yeah.
But it it's giving, it is choosing the merciful path of giving us a way to believe that it's possible that all these people had good intentions and were not crazy caricatures of themselves.
Right. Because they could have easily taken a path where literally none of those scenes that you just discussed happened, right? Where Diana was like frantic and, you know,
acting out for attention.
Exactly,
and I mean, that is in there. It is stated like by her therapist, like, hey, maybe.
Yeah, maybe your addiction to drama is blah, blah, blah. So,
but it's still the depiction is fundamentally dignified.
Absolutely. But I think that's a deliberate choice because they easily could have taken a different path that was like much less dignified.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think, we're all better for the path that they chose. Any other thoughts on the third episode before we get to episode 4?
No, let's go to 4.
So after episode 4 is Aftermath.
So we've had 3 incredible episodes. 3 episodes that remind us why we watched The Crown.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, okay. I want to say, let's start with this about episode 4. There are some amazing moments in episode 4. And in particular, the show makes, again, a very smart directorial decision to not show people telling other people the news about Diana's death in general. Like, you see it a couple times, but like...
No, but they mostly say she was in an accident. But when it comes to the actual passing, they mostly cut out the audio.
It is incredible. Like, there's a moment when Diana is still alive and they're at the hospital and the doctor comes out and he has the news that Diana has passed. And the audio goes out. Like, you don't hear him telling anyone like what happens, and you just see everyone's reaction to it. And it is like one of the most gut-wrenching, powerful moments I've seen in anything this year. And the way the show uses sound to do that, it does a similar thing later on when Prince Charles tells their children about it.
I felt so uncomfortable with this, Of course, the audience watching this story, quote unquote, needs to know, right? Because we've spent a lot of time with the boys in the first 3 episodes.
Needs to know what?
What it's like. Yeah. Like, how? What is their reaction to any of this?
Yeah.
But they have spoken about this period of time as so incredibly traumatic that I feel very... even with the sound cut out, I feel very ugly about it.
Yeah, well, and it's a major subplot, right? William, right? Is it the older one, right?
Yeah.
His reaction to it is a major subplot in the episode.
Right, so. And I could have used, to the extent possible, less of it, even though it's a fictionalized depiction.
Yeah.
Charles is also given a pretty gracious edit.
Extremely.
But he says these things that, I think will feel universally resonant, which is like, I'm letting the boys sleep because as long as they're asleep, they still have a mother.
Yeah.
And anybody who's had to break the news of a loss to somebody will understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, acknowledge that as the show deals more with people that everyone knows and who are still alive, it gets thornier when you're just making shit up, which the show does all the time.
Well, for me, the challenge to their children.
Yeah. But putting that aside, like, there are some really amazing moments. Like, you know, and then Charles says something along the lines of, this is going to be bigger than any of us, like, the largest thing any of us has ever seen. You know, he said it in a way that I was like, wow, that's like very poetic and true.
Yes.
Like, it is going to dominate your entire life. A singular event. And so
that you weren't even directly part of.
Yeah. And so there's many great things about the episode. But the episode chooses to introduce us to Ghost Diana and Ghost Dodi. And that is a creative misstep that I would say. It is not catastrophic, but it is a very terrible misstep. It is, I think you and I both agree, completely unnecessary. And it feels like the show does not trust its own instincts. It does not trust what it has created. Because the reason you bring those characters back in ghost form is because you as the showrunner...
I need to hear the end of the sentence because there is no reason.
You as the showrunner and the writer are like, oh, it's too... like, we can't have those characters just die off without any catharsis with the people who are most important to them. And so we need to have Charles confront ghost Diana. Dreadful. We need to have...
Okay, so I actually think when people pass away, lots of folks do continue to have dialogues with them or continue to ask them for advice or imagine that they're there. So I actually don't think that is as awful a concept.
And coincidentally, it happened to both Prince Charles and...
I think it's really
Muhammad
common with grief.
All right.
But... In Russian ice dance choreography, I know a lot about Olympic level figure skating.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they would do something really, really that they thought was very novel choreographically, they had a rule of three.
Yeah.
Do it three times. The first time, people are just so startled. The second time, they can admire it. And the third time, they can relax and enjoy it. The first time that there's a ghost Diana, I was like, woof, okay, fine. You know, do I believe Charles is haunted by Diana's ghost? Literally and figuratively, sure. And I wish that they had maybe had her be a little fuzzier or something that didn't make it feel quite so literal. But
yeah.
The content of their discussion did not strike me as unreasonable. Then we get Ghost Dodie. And then Ghost Dodie really doesn't say anything that would not have already been literally in the first three episodes made text, right? Like, this really adds no value. But what I appreciated is, hey, Diana's not the only person that died in the crash.
And there
is a huge tendency to overlook Dodie. So they use that opportunity to literally say, why do they not care because I'm an Arab? You know, they don't care about my son dying because he's Arab. You know, like, and so they really, okay. I'm like, all right, okay. But it's when Ghost Diana shows up to the queen.
Yeah. I mean, I was like, I think both of them would be unhappy with this. You know, like, it's just...
You mean both real life?
Yes.
Queen Elizabeth II and Princess
Diana. Yeah, would be unhappy with this depiction. Like, okay. I want to acknowledge what you said, which is like, you're right. People do speak with visions, you know, versions of the people who have departed us. I think, you know, Charles and Diana just doing that would have been like, okay, if it was just that one scene, I'd be like, okay, that mildly bothers me, but whatever. But then, like, when Dodie shows up, it's like, oh, okay, like, now, now we're really taking it over the top.
You could be in for six more episodes of Ghosts of These People. Maybe we'll see the ghost of Trevor Rees-Jones, because, by the way, a third person died in the crash that is extremely not acknowledged, who's the bodyguard we see like all day long, Trevor.
Wait, no.
Trevor Rees-Jones survives the crash. Henri, the driver dies.
Yeah, you might see a ghost of the driver.
Yes.
But when she shows up for the queen and literally just articulates the themes of the show out loud, that is when the show lost me, right?
I am really struck that the first four seasons of this show are about the queen. And the final two seasons seem to have, like, just cannot get any interiority out of this version of the queen.
Yeah, it is a disastrous depiction of the queen, I think.
Like, she has no agency. You have no idea what she's thinking. I get that she's closed down and that she, you know, believes in duty above all else. But I just don't... I almost don't buy that she could be this detached as what we're seeing. And so it's like they end up needing Diana because the queen is undercharacterized.
Yeah.
And is no longer the main, not even no longer the main character of the show. Feels like no longer a real character in the show.
Well, you did say, so one of the big decisions around, and let me just say, if you're ever in a situation where you have a ghost of a character show up and then just start saying what the theme of the show is, something has failed in the creative process. Like, do not have characters just say the themes of things. Like, that is just very bad. And that's exactly what she does. You know, she's like, you know, you reminded us what it meant to be British, and now Britain is reminding you. It's like, oh my gosh, it's terrible. So, yeah, that's bad. Don't do that. But the other thing is the final part of the fourth episode is about the queen's decision to address the nation, right? And theoretically, she's not supposed to talk about it because Princess Diana's not in the family. And I did like... That was like a nice, appropriate dig at Charles when, you know... Elizabeth and her husband are like, we wanted her to stay in the family. Like, everyone wanted her to stay in the family. Like, you're the one that didn't want her in the family, Charles. You know, like, which is, like, by the way, like, a brutal thing to bring up at that point in time, because it's, like, that day.
But I wanted more of that.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted them to really have it out more.
Yeah.
Because so far, what we've seen of Charles is, like, a real love for Diana, a real self-awareness of what she brought, and, like,
in this season of the show,
and the whole family's position relative to that sort of megawatt chemistry she had, or charisma. And I am floored, up until that exchange that you just mentioned, that they've let him off the hook so easily, the writers of this show.
Yeah.
And so I wanted more, like, what does Elizabeth think? Because I know Elizabeth thinks this is a huge pain in the ass and yet another thing she has to deal with regarding Diana. But, like, the idea that she blames Charles, that would be great. You know, or I don't know. I think that in some ways they don't want to go where they don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have been very light about touching, like, what did the queen really think?
Mm-hmm. Because it's unclear, you're saying, in real life, like, what she really felt. Well, anyway, so I think we can say the show's attitude about Charles has been pretty mixed. Season 4 was a, like, I would say, brutal character assassination of Charles. Like, it makes him look like a complete piece of shit in Season 4, the way he treats Diana. It's horrible. And then Season 5, it's like, hey, Charles, not that bad. Like, he knows what the youths are into.
He can build an organic garden at Hargrove.
He's pretty good. And then, you know, this season continues that trend, but, like, also, like, is a little bit more mixed. But it's a largely very dignified depiction of Charles overall, I think.
Yeah, that's because this season is going to be about the Camilla Parker Bowles apology tour part 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we start with her campaign to be married to him, and that gets disrupted, obviously, by this. And but the through line is going to be Charles and Camilla.
And I
cannot make the barfing motion enough. Like, you can't see me, but I am not a Charles and Camilla shipper.
It will end with Charles and Camilla getting married, probably, or, like, towards the end.
I have to believe that's where we end it.
And then it's like, and, you know, connect that to the glorious future that we already exist in today, baby. All right, anyway, you had mentioned something intriguing, which is that apparently the queen needed to be worn down by her staff to address the nation.
No one knows.
No one knows.
No one knows why there's this 5 or 6 day silence after Diana dies and the queen doesn't say anything. So it's unclear whether she came to it on her own after prayer, or she just thought it was the right thing to do, or she read the room, or she whatever got badgered into it. But there is a noticeable and very unpopular silence emanating from Buckingham Palace, which is literally not habitated. I mean, they're just still on vacation in Scotland. Because, you know, every summer they go to Scotland.
Yeah.
They just don't come back from the vacation at first. It's a horrible look.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they assign a sort of very, very, very conservative version of the view of things to Philip, and they assign a relatively progressive version of views to Charles in this. And I don't know if that's 1,000%.
And then in the middle is Queen Elizabeth, who needs to be convinced by Ghost Diana to do the right thing, basically. I will say that Queen Elizabeth's decision to not address the nation is in character with, you know, everything that we know about that character from the show. And, like, it makes sense. That,
I just would have liked to have seen her truly wrestle with it as a character on her own. She didn't need Ghost Diana. I could have seen it on her face. If it were Olivia Colman, she could absolutely pull off a performance where I just watch her face and, you know, like, I agree that they didn't trust the actors enough and the script enough.
Yeah. Brutal. Brutal. So episode 4, not a complete waste. There were some really incredible highs, and also just some terrible lows.
I think it was fine. I still think it is a good entry, but there's just this one very odd thing. And so it's like, what are we going to have, like, more Ghost Diana and Ghost Dodie in the rest of the season?
I hope not.
I can't.
I can't have that.
Is Ghost Diana going to show up and talk to William when he starts dating Kate Middleton? Like, I just can't have this.
I concur. Any other thoughts on the first four episodes?
I'm currently spoken for because I'm married to you. But if anyone ever really wants the way into my heart, just clock the Cartier watch that I'm wearing. Also, I don't have a Cartier watch. And then stealth go out and get me the same version, but crusted in diamonds.
Mm-hmm. Which and is then, what Dodie does. On
yes. Boat, and yeah. then fill my house with roses and then have a very subtle card that's like New York next week. You know, like I don't know who could say no to that as a date, as a first date.
All right. Well, way to throw it on the gauntlet right at the end of the episode. I'm trying to think if I had any additional thoughts. Again, a very strong batch of episodes. And I think it's helped by the fact that it's telling one story. It's not trying to figure out like what...
I'm concerned about the final six because I'm concerned it may have a somewhat miscellaneous feel. Just because, you know, events happen and they have to highlight at least some of them. But I think... to the extent that they can keep in frame this question of like, how does the monarchy attempt to reckon with like the fact that it was attainable to get all the love and adulation they wanted, but not in a way they could control.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe there's some
melancholy
story we can finish out there.
It's a good thing they never did anything like that ever again with another universally beloved woman that married into the family.
We watched the Meghan and Harry documentary, and you know, you can say what you want about that as a piece of documentary filmmaking in terms of like the access feeling very, you know,
pro Meghan and Harry,
controlled. But there are times they're in cars.
It's extremely similar to what we see
trying here. To escape photographers and the cameras in the car. This is like after they've even exited, you know, like, and so it's just really upsetting to think about how little has changed.
Indeed. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Podcast.decodingtv.com is where you can find more episodes. decodingtv@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought of this episode of Decoding TV, as well as this batch of episodes of The Crown. We'll be back in a month or so.
Yeah.
With the final batch of episodes of The Crown.
In the meantime, moi your thoughts.
Thanks for listening.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.